Hello, listeners, and welcome to this week's episode of 321 Go Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Scanlon. Today's episode is brought to you by Icon Athlete Affiliate Programming. If you want to learn more about what Chris Spieler has going on over at Icon Athlete, go to iconathlete.com/321go. Today we're joined by Tex and Luke from Power Athlete HQ. We talk a lot about some coaching cues that you might have for some of your sport-specific athletes. So today's episode may be a great one for you to share with your coaches or your head coach, or maybe you have a sport-specific program and you'd like some cues from these guys. So we talk about some technical coaching things, but from the affiliate owner's perspective, you get a clear idea in this episode. It's actually a two-part episode, so today you'll be listening to part one. You get a clear idea of what the sport-specific coach is after in their off-season programming. And after talking to these guys, the off-season sport-specific training, in my opinion, looks a lot like the corporate wellness programs. Meaning, to build a good, robust corporate wellness program or sport-specific program, it takes a lot of time and consistency and building up a network of people who trust you and know what you're up to. So enjoy today's episode. Again, this would be a great one to share with your coaching staff if there's any interest in their part. On building a sport-specific off-season training program. Go check these guys out, powerathletehq.com. Big thanks to Tex and Luke. These guys really brought it on this episode. They've got a podcast as well if you want to check that out. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. For the listeners that are just joining us, we are joined by Tex and Luke with Power Athlete HQ. And as we just discussed, you relocated your headquarters to Austin. I want to get into that a little bit more, but first, bring our listeners up to speed with Power Athlete HQ. What do you guys do?
Power Athlete's we call ourselves a worldwide strength and conditioning system in the sense that we are chasing performance versus vanity, right? So we like to say we empower performance, and that goes across the spectrum of every athlete, every age group, every skill level. We try to provide the tools to unlock athletic potential so you are empowered to perform better. You know, whatever that means, you know. For my 70-year-old mother, she just plays around with grandkids. You know, for my old man, who's also 70, it's so he can hike around and hunt caribou. But for a hard-charging 15, 16-year-old athlete, it's about providing them an opportunity to experience youth sports at a high level and potentially, over 4 years, earn themselves a scholarship. So I guess, and then in contrast to that, in the CrossFit gym, and the CrossFit hierarchy taxonomy is the same as football. At the peak, there is NFL players for a football player. And at the bottom is kind of the Pop Warner League or whatever you want to call it. And then in the CrossFit world, there's the games athletes. And then you keep kind of going down each tier. You have games, regional, throwdowns, local, and then in-box, fire breathers, so to speak.
What about the garage gym?
And even the garage gymmers. So we work with a lot of the fitness crew as well about unlocking this athletic potential, because athleticism is really your ability to seamlessly, effortlessly combine movement patterns to accomplish tasks, right? We have a little beefier definition than that, but for the sake of this conversation, I think it'll do. And within CrossFit, the guys who are great locally or even at the highest level make it look easy. It's effortless. It's seamless, right? So that's what our training does, is it unlocks that athletic potential to effortlessly combine or execute a task.
Right. And we not only attack energy systems. So if you think back to where CrossFit first started, it was specifically energy systems. Then they started working in the fives. If you go back to those days, it was 5-5-5. Awesome. So then when CrossFit football came around, it was the strength followed by the conditioning. So that was the real first kind of exposure to the CrossFit community had to this strength and conditioning. So what we try to do is introduce people to that concept of a sound, tried and true strength and conditioning. So whether you're in your garage gym or freaking NFL player walks through your door during a lockout, or NBA, we actually had gym owners that this happened to, they're prepared with strength and conditioning principles, practices that are tried and true to help empower these athletes.
So later on, I want to hear about your guys' stories, but I want to put a button in what we just said regarding the various athletes that could walk in our listeners' door. I know personally I've had an experience of having a professional athlete show up, like a starting professional athlete, multi-million dollar contract, walk in my door and said, I heard this is a great place to train in my off season. Juxtapose that with I have a group of women who are in the middle of chemotherapy that have a special class dedicated to them. And I think that there's a broad range. So I want to put a button in that discussion, guys, because I've looked at your hierarchy of training, your sort of training pyramid. So I would like to introduce that idea to our listeners. But first, I want to hear about you guys individually. How did you come to Power Athlete HQ as your experience from coaches? I read a little bit about your bios, but I want to hear from each one of you.
Tex and I are over here giggling because we run a podcast as well. We like to say it's a premier podcast in strength and conditioning. There's an echo. No, we just did a 209 episode, which so for your listeners, if they're even remotely fucking, who knows? I don't know. Sometimes we think we're interesting. Sometimes I just what? Stop talking, you know? But our episode 209 is like a 3-hour
journey
of how this whole, every step of the way to that point.
A hero's journey.
Yeah, I guess you could say.
We started from the bottom and now we're here.
You're here. So Tex, why don't you take it first? Just kind of
The 2-hour version of the five.
Let's go 2-minute version, which should shake out to about 30 minutes.
quickly, Division III lacrosse player from Texas. So growing up, all I knew was weightlifting, sprinting, and playing your sport, football at the time. And then took that and turned it into an opportunity to go play some D3 ball. It was basically football with a stick. I was a D-middy. I couldn't catch or throw. Just send me as hard and fast as I can into the other guy. So then took that into I'm going to lift, run, and play my sport for 4 years, turned it into 4-year starter, 3-year captain, and the opportunity to become a grad assistant coach. I started playing lacrosse when I was 16, so I was recruiting players that had more experience, more knowledge of the game than me. But what do I know? Lift weights, run as fast as you can. So I took that and created the responsibilities of a strength and conditioning coach, and I did that for 3 years. I realized I'm a better strength coach than I am a lacrosse coach, so I jumped ship over to Georgetown U just as a strength-only coach. Took on basically all the bottom-tier teams, women's lacrosse, women's crew. God bless them, but the challenge when we talk about developing athleticism. Mm. So at that point, I'm kind of managing a gym, still being a part of this just to pursue a passion while able to kind of provide for myself. So running that gym, it was a CrossFit gym. So got involved with Luke, kind of followed the CrossFit football approach of heavy, hard, fast, kind of a team mentality into the box. And just kind of kept up my education. I jumped from Georgetown to Texas, just football. So now actually applying strength and conditioning to football. Back to Georgetown, and now I'm just a 100% power athlete traveling the world, teaching people how to teach people to move and really empower them and create a reverberation of strength. If I can hit this coach, then they can hit their athletes, and it's never ending. When I've just discovered at the college level, you get maybe 15 new kids a year, and you only have the opportunity to impact maybe 100, 200 max in your career. I want more than that, so this is why I'm here.
And so Texas mentioned CrossFit football a couple times, and before Power Athlete materialized into what it is today, we have been contracted by CrossFit HQ to run at first what was the CrossFit football seminar with John Wellborn. That was in 2009 that kicked off, and Tex was at one of the first ones. And then where it all started. Her name was Kathy. played football since I was a pipsqueak, played up through high school. Pretty promising high school career, played with a lot of great guys, state championship Tex. I don't know. Do you know I'm a state high school state champion?
I played against the state champs every year.
Oh, that's nice. But, ended up ended up having a neck condition in high school football. I intended fully on playing college somewhere, not D1. You know, I'm a 5'10" white guy who at the time legitimately weighed 210 pounds, although program weight was closer to 240.
Sounds like a D3 all-star material.
You know, it fully intended on playing, but developed hypolordosis of the cervical spine, which is a reversed curve of the C-spine, and in the top of my spine was resting on my brainstem, and any sort of anterior blunt force would cause a blackout. A little different than a concussion, but still bad shit. So I had a slightly different collegiate career. Rather than chasing around dudes in pads, I was chasing around, overweight babes at the end of the night at the bar, you know, because I wasn't that guy. I'm not going to take home the hottie. I'm going for the D-League. You know, I'm a D-League guy. Tex, what's wrong with that? And but still banged weights, you know, but that's where it transitioned from my training in high school, which I had a legit strength coach in high school who, you know, looking back only after learning, had it all, like, had me sorted. Lift heavy, run fast. You know, it's not too complicated. Don't get worried about the minutiae. Focus on movement quality, limiting factors, injury mechanisms, things like that. But in college, it was totally different. You know, it's classic bodybuilding. All pecs, all arms, like all day. Let's do it. And then graduated from college, found CrossFit after taking a stint running triathlons, thinking that's how you got in shape. And this is like 2005, you know what I mean? And you know, for anybody out there who's listening, who's been there since those days, like, there, we didn't know what the fitness, we didn't know what it was yet. Like, what CrossFit was eventually going to define for people in terms of fitness ability, right? So you fucking run triathlons, right? Swim, bike, run. And then, you know, everyone gets a medal, but you think you're a fucking badass. So I go to a CrossFit gym after that and think I'm going to kick down the doors and burn this bitch down because I'm a triathlete, and I implode. Starts my CrossFit honeymoon. In that journey, I find CrossFit football and go to the seminar. Same deal. Just kind of – it took me back to my roots, followed the program, hard, heavy, fast, changed our gym, hard, heavy, fast. People got better. They liked what they were doing, wanted to be a part of it. John Wellborn put out a post on his Talk to Me Johnny blog, and I answered and ended up getting a gig. And that was in 2011. So since then, and Tex, you came on in 2012, about a year and a half later. And since then, Tex and I have been traveling the world, hundreds of seminars, hundreds of CrossFit gyms, hundreds of strength gyms, from the Arctic Circle to New Zealand. You know, how many countries, Tex?
24 and six continents.
24 and six continents. So we've been around, man. We've gotten to see a lot of cool shit. But it all, for me personally, you know, what's a little different, I came from like the athlete side of selfishly wanting to improve my training. That's what started this journey. Tex came from the other side, which is as a coach, improving the performance of his athletes.
But it also started with I injured someone. So again, a small school, that we didn't have a strength program, so we didn't have a gym. We had a fitness center, and we were not able to press heavy overhead. We just didn't have enough gear for 40 guys. So I asked the team to kick them in a handstand. Like, that's the best thing we can do to get some upper body strength. And then these were my teammates, still my friends, but now my athletes. I asked one to kick up into a handstand, and he tears his labrum. Senior, I took away his last opportunity to play the game I love. So that kind of sent me down this, I guess, coaching side of it. I had a responsibility to, one, protect my athletes, and second, empower their performance.
Part of our discussion today, guys, I want to circle around this idea of the strength and conditioning coach. So our listeners maybe own a gym. They're maybe the head coach of their gym that they own as well, or maybe they employ a head coach. And you two have an interesting, while a similar story, Tex, you sort of came to this strength and conditioning coach from within. A very common story that we hear, high school athlete turns college athlete, turns strength and conditioning coach. So you were kind of bred from within. Luke, on the other hand, you sort of came to this world from without. You mentioned that you came at it from the athlete standpoint. And our listeners may be one or the other. I want you guys to sort of describe what these conversations look like with sport-specific coaches. Tex having come from within, Luke having come from without.
Sure. Tex, do you want to take it first? Here's what's going to happen. Tex, break it this way. I would more represent the private sector, mm-hmm. right? A gym owner going into a ball program, basketball, lacrosse ball, soccer ball program, and trying to render my services useful, right? Like, because these guys don't believe in anything external. Tex, on the other hand, understands how it is to be a on-team strength coach. And there's two different – I mean,
shit rolls downhill.
Yeah, two yep. different scenarios, right? Internally, you're like the head coach is the boss. And Tex will speak to that. But externally, you know, and this is what – the best thing to do is to volunteer, engage, inform, and then convert. So that, you know, that's kind of a it's a little slippery, and that's going inside. That's trying to get into the program, working in their gym per se, or getting the working with in collaboration with the head coach. It takes time because we're in an interesting flux. 5 years ago, this discussion was more pertinent in the respect that the coaches were tended to be much more rigid, but there's a new generation of coaches coming in who are a little more open to outsourcing, right? But if you're running into a guy who's hard-nosed and doesn't see the value, you ultimately, the easiest way in is to volunteer and you're not a strength coach. You're there for concussion prevention, injury prevention. You have to start speaking. You have to scratch an itch that this coach needs because he's got a system likely that's taking care of his kids. And from there,
it worked for him in college.
Yeah. And that is the biggest thing. What program you found? My program. From when? 19 fucking 60. Like, you didn't even have a DVD player then. That's all I can think of. Anyways. And we digress, which is our specialty. So you go in and it's all relationship building. It really is. I shouldn't say it is all. The easiest way is to develop a positive relationship with the coach and slowly drip what you think is most important and would benefit the program after being a part of it. Mm-hmm. So the least intrusive way to do that is with what we call warm-ups. And we have a whole warm-up protocol that, again, we call warm-ups, but aren't necessarily the traditional get your heart rate up, increase central nervous system stimulation, core temperature, whatever. It is about a long-term movement development protocol. Because when we talk about athleticism, it is the effortless movement, right? And there's really seven movements we break out, three planes of motion, three axes of rotation. We can jump into that later if you want. But so if you start to chunk this out into a finite universe, you can really start to develop the fundamental pieces of athleticism. And you don't have to affect sets and reps. You don't have to affect movement selection or sequencing. And that's what these guys still think is the magic potion. And I mean, listen, there is merit to it. You can totally mess things up, but it really doesn't matter. And that's kind of the beauty of the methodology we've put together here is if you understand the movements that create any training movement, we call these our primal movements, then you can affect positively an athlete's trainability in something as simple as unloaded movement practice, which we call warm-ups, right? Mm-hmm. So that would be kind of a good way to get in the door, but it's all about relationship building and it's knowing when to push and when to concede. And that's kind of an art in itself. And it's a lot like, you know, dealing with that troublesome client that for whatever reason is not fucking listening to you. And you're like, oh, you just want to kick them square in the nuts, but you back down a little bit, let them get a little ground to let you push back. And hopefully you can push back a little further. Mm. So I don't know if that answered your question, Matt. I just kind of barfed on it.
100%. Luke, I think you're spot on. But so, Tex, I kind of want to hear from you, from somebody who had lived in this world for a long time. Because, Luke, I think you framed it really nicely. In my opinion, a coach that's really worth their salt, that is like into movement proficiency and why we're doing something, understanding that sort of why and how we do something is much more important than what we do. Luke, like you said, much more important than the sets and reps is why you're doing it and how you're doing it. That's a very difficult thing to, like you said, talk to a coach who hasn't cracked a textbook since 1963. Those are difficult conversations to have. So,
yeah.
Text from the inside. Frame this conversation for us.
So, like I said earlier, shit rolls downhill. Sport coaches rule it all. So then it's about developing a relationship with them. And so there are certain things that I've learned to just kind of drive and find out what kind of coach they are. And I just refer to these as appeals. So are they a performance-based coach? Are they only focused on the wins? Well, if that's it, well, everything we're going to talk about, everything that I want to apply or anything that I need to adjust, if he wants to do this conditioning or he or she wants to do this conditioning test, then, okay, what's the purpose? Will this lead to the old school fourth quarter shape, quote unquote?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, then I say, well, how about this? What about fourth quarter speed? So I kind of flip that on the coaches' heads, and they like the sound of that versus shape. That's that performance appeal, however you want to say it. Second is going to be increased skill acquisition. So I asked them, individual players, what do you need, whether it's quick feet or just kind of something that's specific to a position or this athlete versus that athlete, how can they improve? What did they do wrong last season? And then say, all right, well, guess what we're going to do in the weight room is we're going to put them in a position to make them more coachable, increase their skill acquisition. But I would be doing the same thing for increased performance. Like, we have our map, we have our athleticism plan. I'm just going to do it whatever I can to, I guess, convince him.
Yeah.
Or her.
Well, you change the focus of the purpose, right?
Yeah. But so. the program doesn't change. It's just our appeal to the coach. And last but not least, and this would go to parents, this would go to recruits, this would go to coaches that I guess are underneath the performance, and they're talking injury prevention. If we're going to squat this way because it's going to make their ankles more, if that was the issue last year, ankles, calves, hamstrings, well, if we're squatting in this toes forward athletic position as thing, it's going to prevent those injuries. So this is also where you can connect to the ATCs. The higher you go up, the more people get involved in an athlete's program. And there's almost this trifecta of head coach, ATC, strength coach. Well, everybody has to be on the same page. Everyone has to communicate. There can be zero backdoor communication. If that happens, you got to break it down. Mm-hmm. And investment comes through understanding. So you almost have to prove that you know what you're talking about just to, I guess, appeal or change the minds. So it's not easy. It's a challenge. And I'm sure it's as frustrating as even kind of breaking into the weight room. And dude, all the shit you see on Instagram of like Clemson's weight room and bad bench press and all these coaches are jumping on them like that, they don't know what it's like. Mm-hmm. Like there is a numbers game, and that coach knows what he's doing. They're freaking winning a national championship. The coach knows what they're doing. Mm-hmm. If you can't just jump on one or two Instagram videos, from your limited coaching experience, you may have 150 people in your box, but imagine managing 150 athletes at one time for 1 hour. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it ain't easy. Yep. So there is a beast behind the curtain, and there's a lot of good, there's a lot of bad. But if you understand these three appeals, you can communicate and really empathize with any strength coach, a performance, increased skill acquisition, and injury prevention. And from the outsider, a private gym owner who wants to break in.
Yeah.
These three are the same appeals.
And Matt, I'm going to ping pong and kind of divert a bit, because there's a third scenario here in terms of pulling athletes out of a program into your private facility, right? So that's not on site. You're taking athletes and you're saying, hey, I want, how do I break into this? We don't need, it'll be off hours. I'll manage it. And cause that's what, one of our coaches, Carl Case in South Bend, Indiana, that's what he did. And, if guys are interested in starting the proverbial summer camp, which is also a way to earn the trust of a coach, here's how you do it, right? There's a lot of equity, sweat equity that might go into this thing before you start making money. I recommend approaching the coach if possible, I guess you can go the parent route as well.
But, and check your gym members. Are there any parents? Are there any mm-hmm. coaches there?
Yeah, that you can pull athletes in and but if you have the ear of the coach, he's not going to want to sacrifice his star players, right? And truth be told, anyone can get the best players better. It's the curse of the gifted. You put Marshawn Lynch in Zumba, that dude's still trucking people, yep. right? Yep. So it's saying, taking some of maybe the B leaguers or C leaguers and saying, hey, I'll take five of these guys. I'm going to put them through the program. I'm going to bring them back to you bigger, stronger, faster, more athletic, more capable, more useful for you, the coach.
So that's what that coach that you had in high school did? Took the D-leaguer?
Oh, dude, listen. I was A-team all day. Do you know what they called me?
Here it comes. He's making this up right now.
Yeah, exactly.
They called me Sir Smash-a-Lot.
For hamburgers or people?
Both. They called me Quad Stack as well. and again, we digress. But it's a great way. And, this is what I call proof of concept, right? And it's low risk for the coach and for the it's an empowering journey for both parties involved. The CrossFit coach or gym owner or whoever's running the program and the 4, 5, 6 C squad that you take and you can build up confidence. You take them through an organized, structured program. We always apply what we call our bedrock program. Linear progression, all primal movements. It's overload, it's progression, it's a specific adaptation.
And sprinting,
right? And it's not complicated. And as a coach, it's empowering to see how what simplicity can do, you know, what simplicity can do for an athlete, and especially a less capable athlete. Mm-hmm. And dude, I'm telling you, once you do that, you're going to crack the code and you'll learn what's needed to run a camp like that. Mm-hmm. And it's not a lot, and you'll be surprised. And it's more about making a connection with the athletes than it is about putting together some magical marketing program.
I will say this. We measure a coach by where they can take an athlete. And I love this quote. We're all about taking the athlete where they cannot take themselves. Mm-hmm. And unfortunate reality at the college level, or the higher you get up, a strength and conditioning coach is measured by their professional athletes, right? I mean, at Houston Texans fans, so I'll use Arian Foster as an example. One of the most prolific and amazing athletes to ever step on the field, but at the same time, one of the most injury-riddled athletes. His strength and conditioning coach was his brother. You could put anybody in that weight room, and Arian Foster would have still done amazing things. So it's not that he, you know, was a measure of the athlete that he had as a coach. We want to measure coaches where they can take just normal people, genetic trash cans, and then put them in a position where they can't put themselves. Take that third stringer and give an opportunity to start. Take that starter who, you know, would have no look from any football program, D1, 2, or 3, and then take and put them in an opportunity to go play some ball, any form, anywhere.
I don't want to gloss over the point that you just made there, because in strength and conditioning, I think, especially at the high school level, which most of our listeners are trying to break into, there's almost a false positive of results. I mean, you take a 15, 16-year-old kid that has almost illegal levels of testosterone running through their body, they could, you know, get dumped off a 20-story building and be uninjured. You put a bar on them, they're not going to not see results. It is just the nature of the beast at that age. So there's almost a false positive that this program is good because this 16-year-old kid put on 5 pounds of muscle. It's like, you know, if that kid was walking around with a gunny sack, he would have put on 5 pounds of muscle.
Sure.
So how do you then – where's that communication come in, Tex? Like you said, we're looking for fourth quarter speed. How do you get that across? Because, like, it's hard to not have a 16-year-old kid's bench press go up over the course of 3 months.
Yeah, Tex.
Well, Luke dropped this term, trainability. Mm-hmm. So trainability, it's similar to genetic potential, right? So there is that cap. But at the same time, guess what we can do? We can push that cap. We can push their trainability. We can push where their potential ceiling beyond what it is by putting them on the appropriate program at the appropriate time. And so for us, it is that bedrock program where we hit 5 major barbell movements: back squat, bench press, vertical press, deadlift, and the power clean. Yes, we catch all of our Olympic lifts in the power position, athletic position. If you ever find yourself with ass to grass on the field or court,
you're fucked.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's applying the appropriate program at the appropriate time. We're not going to do 1RMs because, yes, their testosterone's all over the place. And there are many different factors go into appropriate 1RM, one of them being a correct androgen profile.
Yep.
And the second being reps.
To drive central nervous system efficiency, intramuscular coordination.
Yeah. Which
combinatory ability.
We talk about sports where you have not multiple reps, you just have one rep at a time. So we need to drive efficiency and give them plenty of opportunity underneath the barbell. So we stick with 5s.
You know, our approach is kind of education. And as we dig into what we do, there's a reason behind everything. And, you know, you understand things like the novice effect, novice window, and how, you know, even that kid, you know, might put, what do we say? You know, let's 100 fucking pounds on his bench press, right? Why? You know, did he get stronger? I mean, in the literal sense, yeah. But if you understand the mechanisms that drove the ability, you can learn how to milk them so they A, last, and B, contribute to performance. Because a big bench doesn't make you a better football player, basketball player, baseball player, lacrosse player, like, or big squat doesn't necessarily either. But there is a small, because you talked about speed, there's a small window where increased strength will increase speed. And that's a small window in for a young lifter. And that is chronological age, biological age, and kind of training age, where strength will increase speed proportionately. But that's a small window because strength gains will increase. And guess what happens to speed? Mm-hmm. It can go down. So, you know, that might be a trial and error thing. You might have to just explain the physiology behind it, but you're right. Cause in, you know, the late and great Dr. Fred Hatfield, as he would say, in the world of sport, speed is king. How quickly can you excite and relax your musculature is how, what affects speed. So the training should be resembling of that. And I don't know if we're diverging cause I truth be told, I don't have good short-term memory. I'm like Guy Pearce in Memento where I need to tattoo everything. And the only thing I've remembered to tattoo is my tribal armband from 2000. But so, man, that's kind of the thing is, you know, in terms of convincing a coach, because that's like you have – it's a persuasive tactic, right? And it's, you know, relationship helps. Earning trust helps. But at the end of the day, when it comes down to explaining – you got to be ready to educate and you better be sharp and, you know, you better be decently read, mm-hmm. know what you know and know what you don't know. Because when you start stammering over what you don't know, it's worse than saying, you know, I don't know. I'll get back to you. You know, let me call Luke and text. They'll fucking tell me what's up.
I couldn't agree more. I like to think a lot when I talk to, you know, we're talking about this idea of like private sector and sport specific strength and conditioning, like these two gyms. And speaking of the private sector gym owner, let's say specifically the affiliate owner, I'm always interested in what is sort of your strategic advantage? What is the thing that you offer? And I'm sort of formulating this thought of in CrossFit because we're really not afraid of complicated movements, right? A muscle up is a thing that everybody is aware of on sort of day one when they join a CrossFit gym. And let's say 10% of your population in the gym can do a muscle up. So this idea of scaling and progression is really built into the affiliate coach's DNA. So let's just start with that idea first. I think because of that, you see a lot of the adaptive athletes gravitating towards CrossFit. The reality of the matter is somebody with one arm could not walk into an Orange Theory and that Orange Theory trainer be really ready to deal with that. I imagine that like somebody with an amputated arm could walk into most CrossFit affiliates and have some idea or be given something to do that is meaningful. And so let's just take that as our given. Let's say that's a strategic advantage of the affiliate. I also believe that the affiliate coach is also really well set up to look at something like football, look at a play, and be like, okay, I get an idea of the physical demands of this sport because I have an eye that sort of recognizes movement patterns versus reps and sets. So I think that that's a big strategic advantage of our audience's coaches is to look at, mm-hmm. all right, I'll admit I'm much more familiar with baseball strength and conditioning than I am football, but what is the average length of play in football?
7 to 12 seconds.
Like, so I think it is very reasonable for a CrossFit affiliate coach to look at a 7 to 12 second play and say, like, why are these kids running like jogging 800 meter repeats? That I don't get that. Mm-hmm. So I feel like there's a base level of understanding of movement pattern and sport and demand of a 7 to 12 second play. In your opinion, how can we leverage that understanding to have these conversations with coaches?
Well, here's the thing, unfortunately. You know, and again, the tide is changing, so I acknowledge that. But I will tell you right now, every CrossFit gym because of the word CrossFit is at a disadvantage, mm-hmm. right, wrong, or indifferent. Because, and I'm, you know, CrossFit A versus CrossFit B, one may be a better facility. That's just kind of how the cream rises to the top, right? So even if you're the most dialed in CrossFit gym in the area, you could go to this a coach and they're gonna be like, fuck CrossFit. These guys don't know what they're doing. They hurt people, you know? And okay, so you're at a disadvantage. How are you gonna break through that, right? And, you know, it's kind of petty, but it comes down to a little bit of credentials, right? You got a bunch hanging back there, no CrossFit football or SSA, which, you know, that there's a room up top for you, you know,
yeah.
for the most important. but if you can show any sort of formal education or experience of working with a team or with a sport, that helps. Mm-hmm. If you are also an accomplished Division I athlete or D3 All-Star, that might help too. And that's the petty superficial shit. So that out there, like, you may just have to pander to your audience. So, you know, that's one. But now going back to more of the specific kind of strategic advantage is you gotta have a system that you believe in that all your coaches are educated on. You know, when I ran CrossFit Balboa, which was John Wellborn's gym out in Newport Beach, anytime a potential client came through the door, general pop, athlete, whatever, our strategic advantage and our value proposition was that our coaches travel the world teaching other coaches what this gym does, right? Every coach that we work with is a full-time coach. There's no part-timers here. They're here 8 hours a day. They're either training clients, training themselves, or they're learning and reading. And people will be like, oh, I go, don't even sign up today. I don't give a fuck. If you don't want to sign up today, don't. But here's what I want you to ask. How many, you know, are all your coaches full-time? Do your coaches, what is your educational protocol of your gym? Do you have a unified educational system? Go ask people that when you try and join a gym. And gym owners, do you fucking have one? Because you should. Mm-hmm. We rarely run across gyms. Like we were kind of talking pre-show, Matt. We travel, do seminars, Tech spouted off 26 planets, 4 universes, whatever. You know, we travel. We're well traveled. And we pop in and drop in and find an open gym on Fridays. And we observe coaches.
Find an open gym? We just kind of make open
Yeah, we
gym.
Just, yeah, we do. We're like, hey, we're here.
We find the dustiest weights in the room.
Which are the heaviest.
And we pick those up.
And lift them.
Yes. And curl them.
Yeah, you know it. But and then we observe. And then when we approach the coach, find out who they are. You know, if they're the head coach, it's like, oh, are you always this complacent with your warm-ups? And we just fucking do it. Mm. And they're like, oh, well, why? Who are you? Oh, we're here for the seminar tomorrow. We're running the seminar. Oh, no. You know, then here come the excuses. And then when we find out it's a trade work coach, we ask the head coach, do you guys always skip a warm-up? No, they should have ran the warm. They didn't. So there's no unified approach. And then even working when we have people from the same gym and we get to work with them at a seminar and we ask them about their value systems, their core principles, they're different. So there's no unified messaging. If you can confidently say that to a sport coach, to a parent, that you have a continuing education program that deals specifically with either fitness, like making it to the games, or baseball specific programming, and all of your coaches are a part of it, and it comes from a combination of Eric Cressy and fucking Mike Boyle and the power athlete guys, you know, that might perk some ears up, you know. And I think that that's what's important in trying to get that competitive advantage. So, you know, we do run across some gyms that are dialed in, but I would say it's probably a 90-10 split, 90 being, hey, you know, people are just complacent with that shit. It's more about just covering class hours.
And what we're also witnessing is a lot of gyms go to specialists. So you have the strength coach here, or you have the Olympic lifting coach, and then hopefully they teach the other CrossFit coaches how to do their specialty. Well, guess how we're looking at things, not as an Olympic lifting coach, not as the strength guy in the gym. We're just looking at his coach. And how we're able to do that is because movement is movement. Mm-hmm. And we base our methodology off training principles. So if you're able to walk into Westside, you're able to walk into freaking Kansas City Royals camp, you can have a, if you know the principles, you can have a pretty good conversation with anybody, not just Olympic lifting coach. So we just want to teach anybody that comes to our seminar or does our online EDU, it's movement, it's principles. And from there, we want you to learn because you can only learn by coaching, but we can put you in a position to set yourselves up. So when we go and go into these gyms, we ask them about principles. Like, what's this accomplishing? Are you trying to overload these athletes, or what did they do yesterday? Is this fall in line with what are they training for? What are their goals? Is this a random thing? So it's an interesting experience to kind of see other coaches' perspective, and they don't know who we are. We're just people walking in and asking these questions. And they give us
with amazing traps and what could only be assumed flow to be abs under a shirt, which, you know, they're slightly mistaken. Well, I got an ab. I've got one round ab.
Ah, ab.
We want gyms to have a unified voice and unified message. And honestly, if you are the head coach, the owner, and you have somebody underneath you, even if they're a good coach, but they're undermining the voice or they're applying too much of their opinion to this that's not in line with the goals of the gym, get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then develop somebody that believes in what you're doing.
Go ahead, Matt. Well, I was going to say nothing of value.
No, I want to keep building upon this idea because I love the concept of, I think back in kind of old school Globo gym days, this principle is called club blindness, meaning you spend all day, every day inside of your gym. You become blind to the shit that's wrong in your gym.
And the smell.
Yes, exactly. So you guys have done this thing. I love the fact that you've done this secret shopper thing in these gyms. And it's unfortunate to hear that there is this 90-10 split. I want to begin to uncover because, Tex, you hit on this idea of context around what you're doing. I'm a firm believer that this is the secret that I teach all of my coaches. How do you get everybody in the room excited about squatting, front squatting, let's say? You know, if we have a front squat day and we're doing a 5x3 on front squat, if you tell everybody that it's an ab exercise, all of a sudden, like the 70% of the room that was not stoked about it is now going to be stoked about it. And so I try to teach all my coaches context and understanding. All right, everybody in the room wants an ab workout. They think that abs are laying on the ground, flopping and going into spinal flexion. What if we taught them that squatting was an ab workout? And so it's this idea of providing context to what we're doing. So I want to hear from you guys. When it comes to this 10%, you talk about the 90-10 split. What are the 10% doing right that we can learn from?
I would say authentically invested in what they're doing. I mean, their members are trust them. Their members do what they say. There's no like, you know, throw the head back on warm up A or B. And they're in it to win it. You know, I don't know if that's a kind of cliche way to say it, but you can feel the energy. They can exude the energy. And, you know, at our gym, what you're talking about would be an element of what we call managing the experience, because people aren't coming to learn about flexion, extension, the physiology of why they're doing this or that, or understanding progression and overload and primals. They're fucking coming because they work a shit job, 40 to 50 to 60 to 70 hours a week. Their fucking kids won't leave them alone and they want their time. So give them their time. You know what I mean? And there is 100% an element of motivation or persuasion, if you will. It is like a Spider-Man moment for the listeners. A spider literally just dropped from my fucking ceiling and is about to bite me and give me superpowers.
And you can't see this. You caught it midair, though, which is really impressive.
Well, you go over there, Spidey. but absolutely, what you're talking about is what we would classify as being able to communicate the superficial from the deep meaning. Right? Realistically, we're front squatting to continue a strength progression along our bilateral hip hinge, right? We're adding a variant to load the spine and continue to teach our athletes how to squat well, because there are all sorts of really cute physiological adaptations that occur that contribute to the overall goal, whether it's performance or truly aesthetics, right? But how do we connect on a superficial level? How are we going to get those housewives to stop doing fucking crunches and start lifting heavy weights and believe that they're not going to get bulky, right? No, no, no. It doesn't work your fucking legs. It works your abs.
And cellulite.
Yeah, and it reduces cellulite. It's been scientifically proven. So, I guess I forget the question, Tex, so I'll just let you continue to answer the question.
You're spot on, Luke. I think, you know, we're talking about managing the experience. And
the 10%. Yeah.
So go ahead, Tex. I want to hear from you.
So, it just goes down to passion. Members will feel it. They'll feed off it. And if they're not into it, they're going to go away. And you know what? We don't need their paycheck. We don't need their time. So like I said earlier, I got the opportunity to manage a gym while I was still a sport coach. And I never changed my cap. We would go in and we treated that gym like it was a freaking team. So we had our team uniforms, which, you know, was our gym shirt. I'm actually wearing one right now, mm-hmm. but we would roll deep to competitions. We mm-hmm. encourage everyone to sign up. So if there's 100 spots, we're taking 30 of them.
Cause you're not competing. It's a team,
right?
It's a team mentality.
And so this precedes team competitions. How we did it. We were just a team showing up for each other. So even though it's you doing the workout, it's you doing the lift, everybody's there. We have a sea. Our shirts were purple. I called them PR-ple. So we had a sea of PR-ple in the crowd surrounding your platform. And I treated it like a team. That was our game day. So it was a goal. And what I love about college sports, high school sports, even middle school, right? The goal is intrinsic. It is there. We are competing. We are training for this. It's a little bit different when it comes to running a gym because, you know, the goal is more, I'm going to lose weight, aesthetics, and you can do a lot of great things by saying, hey, we're all going to sign up for this holy meet. We're all going to do this team competition. We're all going to do this paleo challenge. So a lot of different things that we can feed into that team nature. I just kind of defaulted to it because I spent my whole life in the locker room mm-hmm. and I knew it worked. So, but I just brought the passion. So if I was having an off day, we had a great coach who also worked with us at Power Athlete, Callie. She and I have fortunate opportunity to work together in DC. If I had an off day, defaulted to her as the freaking the hype man. If she was just having a day, hey, I took it on. So it was kind of a give and take with a good team. But again, that's what we talked about earlier. Everybody was on the same page, delivering the same cues, the same voice, the same message, and all working towards the same goal: the athlete first.
Yeah, and you know, so that's the superficial, right? The passion, whether it's, I mean, listen, sometimes you fake it. I'm not going to fucking lie. I fake it a lot. But what builds up that passion, deep meaning, right, is having a unified staff, right? So I don't know, you know, the owner operator is hard because you're the only coach in there. I understand. But if you believe in what you're doing and in the program and in your people, the passion's automatic. Does that make sense? But if you have 4 different coaches, one of them's a West Side guy, one of them's pure competitive CrossFit. I don't know who's like a misfit athletics guy. The other one's a power athlete guy. The other one's a
mom,
Poliquin,
or a dad,
a Poliquin gal. I don't know. Like, so there's like 4 different training methodologies that potentially are at conflict with one another. Right. So having the unifying principles can bring that shit together if you know what you're doing. And then if everybody believes, you know, teamwork makes the dream work mm-hmm. and it goes from the top down. And I guess there's an old kind of managerial cliche. If you're not training your people to take your job, you're not doing it right. So that's kind of how the top down works. I truly believe that the gyms, and I can't say this for sure, Matt, but when you ask about those 10%, I think that, you know, the people that worked for them were getting fair and reasonable pay, which varies gym to gym. And basically, you know, also, I don't know what that is. It varies, right? You're the fucking business guy. You know, like certain regions have, and certain types of gyms have different metrics there. So fair and reasonable pay. There's a little bit of appreciation and bonus structure throughout the year, maybe random, maybe scheduled. I don't know. And there's trainer development and trainer education. The gym is paying for certifications, continuing education, and shit like that. And that's, I think, how you can really build those team that believes that can create the experience.
That wraps up part one of the How to Start a Sports Program with Tex and Luke from Power Athlete. Come back next week. We'll add to this conversation a little bit more. I appreciate everybody who has tuned in to this show week after week. I'm going to continue to bring you free, valuable content each week. I just need to ask you a favor. Head over to iTunes, open up your podcast app, tap over to ratings and reviews, and leave us 5 stars. Helps other people find us, helps iTunes catalog us, and I really appreciate it. As a reminder, this episode was brought to you by Icon Athlete Affiliate Programming. If you want to learn more about what Chris Spieler's got going on over there, head to iconathlete.com/321go. You can see all the different programming tracks there. We're also going to be working on some content to show you how to utilize some of this programming for things like specialty courses, competitor courses, and more skill acquisition type stuff. So again, iconathlete.com/321go project. Additionally, all this summer, we're working on marketing in our hub. We have our M3 mastermind groups that are meeting every week, and we've seen some incredible results. I'm going to get some of those people in the M3 groups on the show to talk about some of the things that they're working through and some of the huge benefits that they've seen. I just saw something come through. One lady, Nicole, actually has doubled her revenue since starting in an M3 group several months ago. So they're incredibly effective. Again, if you want to learn more about our hub platform or these M3 mastermind groups, go to hub.321goproject.com. Again, that's hub.321goproject.com. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.